You ready to start?
Yes.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the second episode.
I thought I was doing the intro.
Wait, what do you mean? No. Oh, I want to do the intro. Okay.
Well, we have to have a tradition. That's the thing.
What do you mean? Oh.
This is the Superficial Podcast, episode 2. I'm Eric Hartman.
And I'm Rotondo.
This is my imaginary friend, Rotondo.
Are you really going to do that every time?
Yeah.
Well, first I need to open up with this. Did you know that we ripped off the name?
Yeah, people had told me about that.
Yeah, see, it's funny because we ripped it up so hardcore that in 2016, we saw this name and then went back in time to 2014 and gave it to our past selves.
Yeah, we recorded a shitty episode on Twitch in 2014.
Yeah, and like 100 people watched it live, which was actually kind of impressive for the time.
I think you're making that up.
No, remember? You don't remember, do you?
No.
We had, we made a bullshit claim like, if 100 people get to watch the stream, then we'll do blank. And then the people just kept joining. But I'm assuming it was people multiple watching. But anyway, it was funny. But yeah, so apparently we're time thieves.
Right, exactly like how I ripped off Minecraft for Blockland.
Yeah.
You know, 5 years before Minecraft came out.
Yeah, people say that about Roblox, too.
I remember those arguments about whether or not I ripped off Roblox, like, within a week of it coming out.
Yeah, I know. Did people not understand the whole development time thing? Like, even if a game comes out at the same time as another game and they're similar, unless they knew about each other, there's no way for them to actually rip each other off.
In movies, there is definitely things where people are just, there's got to be espionage going on, like when Armageddon and Deep Impact came out in the same week.
Yeah, that stuff's weird. That's got to be like, Paramount's doing a picture about an asteroid. We got to do a fucking picture about an asteroid.
Yeah.
Get it out same time.
Yeah.
But they're not ripoffs. They're similar.
Yeah. But there's also things where it's an idea whose time has come, right? It just emerges independently everywhere at the same time.
Yeah.
Like when you think you've come up with an original joke and you click on the Reddit comments and it's the top comment.
Yeah.
Also, two people invented calculus at the same time. Independently.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Isaac Newton and Gottfried Leibniz.
Of course, those are names I will remember.
Well, I
know Isaac Newton.
Right. You don't remember the other guy because Isaac Newton shit all over him or something.
Yeah. Well, we remember Paul Revere and not Israel Bizzle because one sounds like a nice name and the other sounds like a bad rap.
And then the telephone was invented by two people.
Huh.
Elijah Gray. And I only remember that name because it was in a an infomercial, like during Saturday morning cartoons when I was a kid. They're like, who invented the telephone? Was it Alexander Graham Bell or Elijah Gray? Answer, Elijah Gray. They're like, but why do we remember Bell? Answer, the patent. It's like, call 1-800, get patent now, and we'll patent your invention, make you rich, so you don't end up forgotten like Gray.
That's so weird, dude.
Another thing I learned about in Saturday morning cartoon infomercials is Scientology. And it was the first time that I heard the people only use 10% of their brain thing.
Oh, God, kill me. I hate that.
They had infomercials for Dianetics. And they're like, oh, the genius of L. Ron Hubbard. It's like, did you know people only use 10% of your brain? Well, use 100% of your brain after you read Dianetics. You know, all of the crazy cult shit didn't come out till later. I thought it was just some goofy self-help thing.
Yeah. I can't blame you. You do know about the Paul Revere and Israel Bizzle thing, right?
No.
Really funny story. It's this great tale because of the fact that the only reason we remember Paul Revere is because his name sounds cool and a writer decided to make a poem about it. Listen to All Much Old and You Shall Hear the Midnight Tale of Paul Revere, right?
Right. Yeah.
So that sounds great. Israel Bizzle doesn't really have a flow to it.
If only it happened today. Snoop Dogg would have me all over that.
And when I learned this originally, the guy came up with the rap because, listen, my children, you shall hizzle the Israel tale of Israel.
Oh, it's got to be listen, my nizzle.
Oh, listen, my nizzle. Yeah. Oh, God. It's awful. I can't even, like, say it with a straight face. It's so bad. But he delivers it great in the original special that I learned this from, like, 10 years ago. But yeah, so Paul Revere did do a ride. He rode about, like, 20-something miles. I'm not sure if this is the exact numbers. I'm using it for dramatic reference. Israel Bizzle wrote about 10 times more. It's really funny.
Maybe Paul Revere is the stage name. All those Hollywood actors and stuff who have, like, horrible names.
Yeah, I don't think it's that case. They both did do separate rides. They both had a separate plan. Just one went much further than the other one.
Yeah, but do you know anyone named Revere? That's got to be a made-up name.
I mean, there's a town in Massachusetts called Revere. That's all I got.
It's like Paul Bunyan. No one's named Bunyan.
Yeah, I don't know, actually. That's a good question.
Let's just settle this once and for all. Is Paul Revere a real person?
For those who can't hear, there are typing noises.
They'll definitely hear. Well, he got his house and shit. I was really hoping Google would just be like, yes or no.
I don't know about that. They don't give straight answers on certain people. Anything that might offend people, like, religiously or Santa Claus, no straight answer.
Yeah, he's a silversmith, and I seem to remember vaguely some of his silver or fake silver stamped with his mark or something on the Antiques Roadshow.
Hmm.
What the... some website started playing music I went to.
Whatever. Yeah. Welcome to the internet. It sucks.
That could be our intro.
Yeah, that sounds good. I like that better than what we did. Oh, God. I mean, you love those pages on the internet, right? Where it's like, top 10 list of blank. Oh, you want to see the 10 things? Okay, there's one on each page. Please click.
Yeah.
I just fucking leave.
I'm telling you, you're going to need, like, browsers and stuff. Browser extensions are going to have to be, like, AI-driven in order to... Because they're running... On the server side of things, they're running AIs to, like, figure out whether or not you're running Adblock or whether or not you're a robot.
Yeah.
And so they'll be like, oh, well, we're not really going to screw up your page because you clicked on something too fast and you look like a robot. We can't just give you the content.
Yeah.
So you're going to need to have an AI on your computer that goes and browses the internet for you and like, navigates all the adversarial AI to get you to actually get the content you want.
Plus, for people like me who still hold out and run NoScript and like generally script blocking software, it's a nightmare. You go to like any news site and it's like, here, enable one of these 50 things. One will give you the site. The other might give you adware.
Well, I went to some article on a news site and I wanted to, it was a discussion thread on Reddit and I wanted to copy and quote a section from it to see like, oh, this, you know, what are they saying here? And then it said that I wasn't allowed to copy and paste, and I wasn't allowed to view source. Like, a JavaScript thing popped up.
Really?
So that's back. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember those.
I wasn't allowed to do it until I, like, you know, ran Firefox and used script block, and then I could just copy the whole article.
Yeah. You remember those old things? They used to not allow you to right-click to save images?
Yeah, as if that...
As if that worked.
This has never gone away. It's still on Flickr and Instagram and stuff like that. They put transparent things in front of the image. So you can't right-click them.
Yeah, it's shitty.
I mean, you can just go into the inspector.
Yeah.
You can hit Control-Shift-I, or you can right-click and hit inspect, and then you can delete elements that are in front of it. But
it's a pain in the ass.
They have things that they randomize the name so that you can't ad-block them, right? You have to have like a style-based ad-block, which is like a lot more complicated, and eventually it's going to lead to AI-based ad-block, which is one of my topics, by the way. So we can segue to that, which is... It's an ongoing segment in my personal thoughts file where I write things down called All Advertising is Fraud. And the current topic is cloaking, which we have just talked about. We have to be careful to not give too much inside baseball because on fighting Google. But
yeah, no.
So cloaking is now necessary.
I mean, should we just say what cloaking is?
Yes, I'm going to read right from the Google's Google's definition. So cloaking refers to the practice of presenting different content or URLs to human users and search engines. And cloaking is considered a violation of Google's webmaster guidelines because it provides our users with different results than they expected.
Yeah.
And then they have a video. It's like 8 minutes long. But the guy says that there is no such thing as white hat cloaking. All forms of cloaking are bad. Okay?
Yeah.
But now, if you want to maintain monetization... on YouTube or via Google Ads, they're starting to roll out more and more intense AI scrutiny. And I say AI because just of the amount of labor that it would take and the amount of stuff that they're doing.
Yeah.
Right. So I have some links. One is to a digital gaming video on Bionic Commando. I will send it to you somehow so you can see.
All right. I cannot watch this while we're recording, but
right.
I'll imagine it.
The text is the important part, the title.
Oh, yes.
The text of the title is Bionic Commando, originally called The Resurrection of Hitler, Digital Gaming featuring Greg.
Yeah.
I don't know who Greg is.
But, I like Greg. I like
I in Hitler is a weird Unicode character.
It's an upside down exclamation point.
yeah, it's not a regular I, because if you put Hitler in the title, Google's amazing, super sophisticated AI demonetizer will demonetize you for talking about Hitler.
Yeah. This actually, I have a relevant thing to add to this. It literally happened to our podcast because I put an ad on it. In the description, I mentioned school shooting because we talked about it. And generally speaking, we talked about it as like, you know, not a good thing. You know, school shooting bad.
Yeah.
Killing people's bad. Did you know that? But they demonetized the video. They had it limited ads for a little while. And I was like, okay. And for a second there, I thought, were they going through the entire video? Because if they're going through the entire video, then we just talk like assholes. I see, I just said the word asshole.
Yeah.
That's not good. That'll get us banned right there.
Okay, I've seen things, and I couldn't find this again. It irritated me. But I saw a thing where someone had done some tests, they'd done some experiments uploading random videos to YouTube with text in the title and basically proving that they're doing OCR on the images in the video.
Oh, God.
So, like, if you write the word gun in text, or like beheading or something in the text, then that gets flagged as if that's what happens.
Yeah.
Like as if people are like, oh, violence, terrorist acts, like, yeah, in text in the video.
Well, I mean, I don't know about you. When I record my violent beheadings, I put violent beheading in bold impact letters flashing on the front of the screen.
Right. So they do this not only on YouTube, but on anywhere that has Google ads.
Yeah.
And they've been rolling out amazing updates, like their neural network-based anime lolly labia detector, which sounds ludicrous, but that has to be what it is.
Yeah.
Right? They've got some sort of AI classification system for telling how much anime lolly labia is shown through panties, yeah, and if it hits a certain threshold, you're banned.
For anyone wondering why we demonetize some threads in the Blockland forums, too much labia.
And here's the problem, though. I'm still getting complaints about the hot girl thread, even though I removed... We might have to delete this whole segment from this, this part.
Fine.
But I'm still getting nastygrams from Google about ads being shown on the hot girl thread, which is years old. So it'd be like, here's this post from 2011. It'll say on this page, on like the 52nd page of this 4,000 page thread from 2011, one of these 400 embedded images is bad. So therefore, you don't get to have ads on this page. You need to fix this. Here's how you can fix it. Either remove the content or remove ads from all offending pages.
Yeah.
There's no ads on the page. There haven't, yeah, been any ads on it. And so it's a robot out of control, and there's no feedback mechanism. There's no report a problem thing. It's just a black hole. So it can just stomp on you forever, and you can't do anything about it. I have another example of cloaking I saw in the wild. That's why I brought it up. In this article, Subnautica... sound engineer being fired for tweets that they made.
Oh.
In the article, though, they say the word, the phrase, the initialism, SJW, but the W is not a W. It is the closed back rounded vowel character, which kind of looks like a W.
Wow, that's actually impressive.
So it's not just a theory that the thing that's happening to me and I'm crazy. It's other people have noticed this and are already acting upon it in order to disguise their content from Google.
That's insane. That's insane. That's absolutely insane.
But it's going to be absolutely necessary in the future. Like, why would you?
Yeah.
It's just going to put... Google's building a filter bubble for themselves, right? They're isolated. They're backlashing out against anything that's outside of their...
Google sphere?
Fluffy, padded cell that they want to build for themselves. And so people don't show them. And since they backlash and there's no... They fight against this, right? They punish you for violating their weird policies. And then they, you know, financially, and there's no feedback system for them. Then people just end up telling them what they want to hear, which is just going to drive them further and further to insanity. If you're not exposed to the actual realms of what happens in the real world, you know, your nervous system is highly attuned to relative changes. So if you don't get calibrated by seeing extremely good and extremely bad things,
yeah,
random noise just starts to come out of your brain. You start to get offended and by stuff that's not a big deal.
Yeah. You've heard about the Face App controversy, right?
Oh yes, we have yeah, discussed this.
We've talked about that. Have you heard of the new hotness, which is the video replacement of people's faces with other faces?
Yes. We should give context.
Yeah.
So FaceApp is a app for your phone. I don't know why they make... Why does everything have to be a fucking phone app? Like, because I would buy this thing if it was just like, here, pay, give us money and you can have this program that runs on your computer, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, it uses a neural network to change people's faces. And it could do things like add a smile to people's faces or make them old or turn them from male to female. And for a while, they had a thing that could change your race.
Yes.
And they got into trouble from that.
Yeah.
And they removed it. Although it was pretty convincing sometimes. But the thing about it is that...
It was impressive.
I had seen the results of this face app without knowing that it was face app. I thought it was people photoshopping. Because the smile thing, like, there was this whole trend on 4chan to take screenshots of video games and run the face app filter to give them a smile. So then people would, like... It'd be like Snake would be on the torture bed in Metal Gear Solid. And if you have this big toothy grin or whatever. Or, like, the guy in... In Dead Space, there's a scene where you have to, like, do eyeball surgery on yourself.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And they put, like, a big smile while he's, like, doing eyeball surgery, like, having his eye gouged out. And, like, and it looks hilarious. And also, it matches, like, the art style and stuff, that you can do it on cartoons and things.
Yeah, it's surprisingly effective. The new hotness, which is the video replacement, is done by, like, it's a self-learning AI. So you basically give it a shit ton of pictures of some artist or some actor or whatever, and it'll... basically learn through the algorithm to replace the face in each shot, in each frame, and give you a result that is almost pretty convincing if it's at a low enough resolution.
Yeah, it gets blurrier.
Yeah.
But that might just be an iteration thing. Like, they didn't have enough... Because what they do, I'm not sure how it works internally, but the latest sort of technology is what they call adversarial neural networks, wherein they'll have two neural networks that fight each other. Like, one is trying to make one... neural network is trying to distinguish what a fake looks like, and the other one is trying to generate fakes, and so they get better and better.
Yeah.
And so it just matters, like, how many times you run them against each other. And what's amazing about this, though, is that this is just, like, it's done for porn, right? So if you, it's all banned from Reddit now. That's the real thing.
Yeah, I have that written down, too.
It was on the deep fakes subreddit, where, and it was all done for putting celebrities' pictures onto pornography.
Yeah.
In a semi-convincing manner. And so what's interesting
about
this,
though...
Well,
it wasn't originally done for that, I don't think. I think he just took the source.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, this was written by... This is done, like, research papers and stuff about this.
Yeah,
yeah. But what's interesting is that a dude, like, implemented this and made a, you know, passable application that would do it and did some examples. Basically, given the amount of time he spent working on this is the amount of time that he could maintain an erection at his desk, right? Like, he did not give a shit. Like, he was not being paid for this. He's just like, here's this thing I'm going to make. And... in some cases, it's super convincing. The most convincing one, though, is the Nicolas Cage replacement.
Yes, the Nicolas Cage ones I have written down as well, because they were impressive.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he spent more time on those because...
He loves Nicolas Cage.
No, because he didn't... You don't have to explain to people. You could show it to people and get social benefit from it without, like, here's this neural network thing I'm working on. And it's not like, here's this neural network thing I'm working on, it's this porn clip. Like, you can't tell people about that. So you have to, like... So you maybe put more effort into it.
Yeah, that's true.
But also, I'm old and I don't know any of the celebrities that they put on the porn. Like, I guess that looks like somebody.
Yeah, see, it's funny you mention that, because it's not that... I realize that I still know who some of these celebrities are, but I don't care about it as much as I thought I would. Like, I feel like if I was a teenager, I'd be like, oh, fuck yeah! But, I don't know. As an adult, I'm good with just any face. Yeah. As weird as that is.
Yeah, also, I think there's this thing where celebrities are not as... Well, I wonder if celebrities are even as famous as they used to be, right?
Hmm.
I mean, Matt Damon is not as famous as Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, that's true. So you're saying that was there a change from the 80s, 90s, and, like, the 2000s and 2010s? And stuff
yeah,
like
just celebrity just being diluted, where there's so many, like, reality TV stars and now YouTubers and stuff. And, you could see a horde of teenagers fawning over some person you've never heard of, right?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, because back in the 80s and 90s, and obviously way before that, there was less, the internet did not exist. So if you heard about someone, almost everyone heard about him.
Yeah. I've heard about this sort of, this people complaining about or worrying about the diminishing of culture, like shared culture in America, where, like, basically baby boomers had all watched the same four TV shows. Like, there isn't a single one that hasn't seen, Leave It to Beaver or fucking any of those old black and white shows that used to get shown on, Nick at Night.
I Love Lucy.
Yeah.
The Honeymooners. I watched a lot of these.
What's that one with the, in Mayberry with the cop?
Oh, I actually don't know. But Mork and Mindy just popped in my head. I enjoyed that one too.
The Andy Griffith Show?
Oh, yeah. I never really watched that too much.
My parents are going to listen to this and be like, how could you not remember that? Actually, they're going to be like, they're just going to be like, oh, I'm so old. People don't even know what Mayberry is from.
Well, I mean, it stands the test of time that we actually know of it. It's not that we know, we were not well-versed in it.
Yeah, but that's because it covers, like, there's an entire period of, like, 35 years that's covered by, like, four TV shows. They didn't have anything else.
I feel like you're greatly underestimating how much variety there was. I just think we remember the ones that, like, stood the test of time, not necessarily because they were good, but it could be because they were just pioneers of their genre.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, now to segue back into what we've been talking about.
There was a period where there was, like, there was four networks or whatever, and that was all the television there was.
Yeah.
Right, so it's definitely some about, anyway.
Yeah. The one more thing I want to talk about, and this is something I think we've talked about briefly before, I'm really, really curious about what the legal ramifications are going to be in the future for these face swap type things. And not even in the case of like, oh, celebrity porn and shit like that, but like pretty soon it's going to get so good that you're not going to be able to tell what a real photo is versus what the modified photo is.
We're probably already at that point.
Yeah, we could be. We just don't know yet.
Yeah, because we're talking about stuff that like a dude did.
Yeah.
Just because he wanted to masturbate. And but if it's like if you get people in a room and say, hey, we're going to produce this propaganda thing, and also we have a huge budget, buy a room full of GTX 1080 Ti's, and we'll just like, also you could do it so secretly now, you'd be like, oh, we're Bitcoin mining, give me 20,000 video cards, and then you're just actually using it to produce propaganda. And also, here's the thing I worry about, like, well, the sort of advertising and propaganda thing is it's going to sound bad, but it's a plague developed in the West, right? And I don't mean that sort of negatively. It's a plague just like smallpox and stuff where you have to become immune to it.
Mm.
And that's why when people from Europe went and colonized the America, the local population was decimated because they didn't have any immunity to any of the diseases they brought.
Okay.
So advertising is like a disease you have to become immune to, right? Like it affects children.
Yeah.
And people are always saying like, oh, children see 10,000 advertisements per year and then they fall. But I think that's actually good because they become
numb to it.
Yeah. You need to become, people are free to do this. You know, it's a side effect of freedom that you get to make things bullshit to put on TV to trick people into buying things.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you were trying to ban that, it would become dystopian. But so people act like it's bad that kids see all these ads, but you need to become immunized from advertisement before you can learn to drive, right? Like by the time you're learning to drive and you're buying a house and you have kids and crap like that, and you need to buy life insurance, that's where you need to be super skeptical already so that you don't get scammed.
Yeah.
And like, you can still get scammed, but like, it shouldn't be super easy.
Yeah.
Like, so every kid, everybody I know has that thing where the experience where they saw a commercial and they bought a toy and it turned out to be shit.
Yeah.
Or they bought a video game and it turned out to be shit. What I'm saying is propaganda could be super effective against third world countries where they have none of this.
They don't have a filter for
immunization
it.
To it.
Yeah.
Right. Like nowadays you show a picture of somebody like juggling or something and someone's like, oh, that's fake. Like, right. Like everyone thinks it's almost gone the other way where people think everything is fake. And
see, I don't necessarily agree with you with that. I think we're getting a very focal, like a very focused set of people because we're mostly internet goers and we talk to internet people and we go on to Reddit.
Yeah.
It might not necessarily be the best set of subjects for this.
Yeah, well, so maybe that's even the case where like there's people who pay attention to computer graphics and video games and animation and internet memes and stuff are slowly exposed to this. I mean, it's going faster and faster, but it's slowly exposed to this thing where you can be like, oh yeah, that's a neural network thing. You can and that's going to get released onto the general population, either in America or abroad.
Yeah.
And they'll have no immunity to this thing and be like, have no concept of how that could even be produced. Right. It's like how you see North Korea doing like shitty Photoshops of their missile tests and stuff.
Yeah.
To fool their population with it because they have no.
Yeah. They have no context.
Experience. You know, they don't have. They're not. You know, people in North Korea, they do get media and stuff from the outside world, but not nearly to the level that anybody in the West does, or even in South Korea, where there's just advertisements bombarding you all the time.
Yeah. I don't know. The one thing about American advertisements, I kind of like, I'm not sure if you've seen many, but like South Korean ads and like Japanese ads, they're kind of completely insane. And I mean this in a good way.
Yeah.
Where they're like very much upbeat. And I see it as insane, But like for them, it's normal, where it's expected for the ad to be upbeat, a little silly and like crazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I kind of like that a little bit better than what we have here, because we kind of focus a lot on like fear. And this thing is better because fuck that other thing, you know?
I don't know. I haven't watched commercials in a long time, but...
That's true. Neither of us have, really.
But one thing I have thought about is when people say, oh, look at this weird commercial from Japan or this weird TV show from Japan. I think there's just as much weird shit in America. It's just we're just...
immune to it.
Used to it.
Yeah.
I mean, like anything like The Bachelor or whatever, where it's like people competing.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Fear Factor. Come on. You show Fear Factor to yeah. people in Japan. They're like, what's wrong with Americans?
I don't know if that's the case, because I want to say they must have a version of it. They must have by now.
Probably. But, I mean, did they, you know, 10 years ago?
Oh, yeah.
And also, it was probably advertised as, like, an American import show.
That's true. Yeah, that's very true.
Also, this shows... I'm getting to the... Speaking of the celebrity fakes and stuff, where I didn't know any of the celebrities, I'm becoming that old guy where I try to come up with a popular culture reference, and I say something like Fear Factor, which came out 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I listened to some... conservative commentators on YouTube and stuff, and they're like, when they try to mention like a celebrity and they mention someone from the 70s, like they're trying to come up with an example of like a sexy girl, they're like, oh, like that Farrah Fawcett poster. It's like Farrah Fawcett's been dead for 20 years.
Oh god.
Like it's not, it's or like Conan O'Brien still references Johnny Carson and stuff like that. It's like that was like 40 years ago.
Yeah, but for, you gotta realize for context of who he is and what he grew up with, and Johnny Carson was a pretty big influence on him.
I just want to shit on Conan O'Brien real quick.
Of course,
like,
why not?
Michael Jackson died, and Al Roker lost weight, and then Conan O'Brien lost 50% of his material, right? You can't just say, oh, and Al Roker is fat. It's like, that. Don't, can't say that anymore, so boop. gotta hire some new writers.
I feel like...
lost half his material.
When's the last time you've even watched Conan O'Brien?
Like 20 years ago.
I feel like he might have changed his demographic a little since then and maybe improved. Yeah. I'm not sure. Last time I watched him was over 6-7 years ago.
Do we want to talk about making video games?
Sure. Do you want to talk about the great progress you've been making on Perennial?
Sure. So I've been working on this game called Perennial for like 20 years.
Yes.
This is embarrassing to the point where... because I go and look at I look at a page. Yeah, where I have a trailer of it from 2012.
Yeah.
And although it does look better than this now, like a lot better.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's why I think you're a little too hard on yourself with some of this stuff.
So, here's what I did. I coded a bunch of interactive things that platforming gimmicks. Because if you look at like Super Mario Brothers and stuff, they have like a lot of things. And I learned this when I was doing the clone of
Mario Land,
the Game Boy one, Mario Land. Like you think there's like four things in Super Mario Land. There's about 45 things in Super Mario Land.
Really?
Yeah.
It just everything's like simple and related to the other things, so it kind of groups together.
Well, like it was about 45 objects that you need. Like, you know, there's a Goomba, there's a turtle shell, there's a moving platform, there's a bullet bill, there's the cannon that comes out of the thing, there's the different birds and stuff, and there's the little bees that fly across, and then there's the spear they drop, right? Those two, and you know, but if you look at something like Super Mario 3, like people are like, oh, you should clone Super Mario 3. No, because that would take that would take many months. I mean, I would totally do it if Nintendo was like, we'll give you money. But they wouldn't do that.
Because no, they wouldn't.
I'm not Japanese. And also, computers are afraid of them.
Yeah. Mostly computers are afraid of them. They gave the license to a bunch of surprising things to American developers.
But if you go and look at it, I bet there's like hundreds and hundreds of things in Super Mario 3. And it's not just the things that people think of, like the boot that only appears in one level.
Yeah.
There's like the little... there's the candle guys. There's little candle flames that move when you're not looking at them. And it's like the... there's boos that come out of the little blocks.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of weird stuff that you don't realize is there until you have to actually make all the levels.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I made a bunch of platforming type stuff. I got bombs you can pick up, three different flavors of bombs. So that bombs that, like, when you touch them, they ignite and the fuse burns down. And you can set the fuse differently using the data entity and the map editor. But there's some that are... that have to be electrically detonated, and some that are detonated when you drop them, and some that are detonated when you touch them, and then so you can do different things with them. And then when a bomb is lit, you can throw it into water and the fuse will go out.
That's pretty cool.
And then if you take it out of the water, it will dry out after a little bit and go back to the middle state, so you can convert the dangerous bombs into safe bombs by dunking them in the water.
That's pretty neat.
I got rolling rocks you can push. I got conveyor belts, and the conveyor belts can interact with the electrical systems. I have this electrical wire system where you push a button and it activates things, and you can turn the conveyor belts on and off, and you can reverse them. I have bear traps. I got falling blocks. I got keys that you push into doors, into locks, and so I've got dozens of things. And then I'm going to distribute those into levels. And so divided the game into three chapters, which I've titled Discovery, Adventure, and Insanity.
Yeah.
Just to sort of good titles. Although none of this is shown, this is all just sort of back end stuff that's used to structure the game. It's like in the Discovery section, you get all of your power ups and stuff and are introduced into sort of standardized mechanics and the plots, in air quotes, of the game.
Haha, writing.
There's different levels of playing the game. There's getting to the end of the level, right?
Yeah.
And then there's collecting everything, finding all of the coins, and finding the three secret areas, the three orbs in every level, sort of like the big coins in the latest Mario games.
Yeah.
And then there are challenges. There's little coin combo flags. As you collect the coins, the combo counts up, and the combo goes away if you don't collect a coin within like 1.5 seconds. So there's little flags you have to touch. There's sort of speedrunning challenges where if you go and collect a big combo of coins and hit the flag is activated.
Yeah.
So a skill challenge added on top of the just getting to the end, and then exploration, and then challenges. And then there's also death challenge, you know, murder challenges where you have to kill enemies to unlock skulls throughout the level. And then there's the super hard challenge, which is getting the hats.
Yeah. I have one question. Where can I go to see GIFs of these things?
Well, I might make a GIF of the the coral enemy. I made a coral thing, which is what do they call this in Blockland? There's a Blockland mod where there's like a blob that covers the whole, that grows.
Oh, I remember that. That was many years ago.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it was called.
Anyway, there's a thing like that. It just grows, except it's 2D.
That's really neat. That's really neat. You should make GIFs of all these things, especially now that I think that your website for Perennial is down.
Is it?
It is. Because that had updated GIFs on it. It no longer does because it does not exist.
Fuck. So anyway, now that I own the domain again.
We're back! Now that Matt's one has actually purchased the site that he thought he owned.
I don't make enough content. I can't even update one website. How am I supposed to update like three websites? And who's going to go to a website that's dedicated to about one dumb game, right? I would rather just have badspot.us updated with everything that I do.
Yeah, the issue with that is that when people type in on Google, like the Forgettable Dungeon, they find my website for the game because it says the Forgettable Dungeon about 50 times on it.
The Perennial is a shit name because it's hard to spell and...
Yeah. It's hard to spell. You can't really fucking Google it.
Whereas like VVVVVVVV is the best name ever made for a game because it's just like a cryptographic hash that specifically refers to this game.
I like the name that we have for my game.
Yeah.
The Forgettable Dungeon.
I came up with that name.
I think you did. You can name other games. You can't name your own.
It's true. I didn't name Blockland. That's why it was so unsuccessful.
Wait, you did name Blockland or you didn't?
I did not.
Who named it?
Some rando on the... Stufu.net forums, which is where you go when you get banned from Shaq News.
I don't think it exists anymore. I wonder if Shaq News exists anymore.
It does.
Really? It probably sucks.
But on Stufu.net, mark your calendars. I'm killing the hosting. This place is going dark at... That's in the Google cache. But when it was still around, I did try to search for the old posts that I made about Blockland, like the original Blockland posts, and I couldn't find them.
Ah, that sucks.
Where because it was literally like people were like, what happened to that Lego game you were working on? I was like, oh yeah, that works. Here, let me patch it up and you guys can play it. Fucking internet sensation.
Yeah.
It was literally that casual and that stupid.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of how it goes. Like, I put my foot in my mouth with my game. Because remember, I released it with only... Because I only wanted it to be a small test, and I released it with only the client, and people couldn't host their own servers.
Yeah.
And it got posted a few too many places, because it wasn't supposed to be posted anywhere. And then the server was full, and no one could play. It's a good test. I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
That's a good lesson for all game developers out there. If you work on a project for 2 or 3 weeks, just release it so people can host it and like join other people's servers and shit like that.
Yeah.
Because it's going to change extremely in the course of a few months, let alone years.
Well, I mean, also the first test is, does anybody actually care?
Yeah.
And
I failed that test because they did care. They just couldn't play it.
Yeah. Make a bunch of things. And so then you've got possibly a theme for every level. Because one, the hard part is like, you're making a level. What the hell is this level about?
Yeah.
Like the opportunity paralysis where you don't know what to make. So you have just like a blank slate.
Yes.
So I've invented a bunch of gimmicks, and I've also come up with some gimmick levels that are totally not ripped off of levels from Donkey Kong Country, like Blackout Basement. And
do I get to ride a rhino in your game?
No, but I do potentially a roller coaster, because I have launchers and I have...
Oh, that'd be really cool.
Well, I have platforms that can ride on the... I mean, a moving platform that can ride on the electrical wires, including navigating switches and stuff. And it can also fall off the wire and float in the water, and also fall off and land on another wire.
Yeah, that sounds cool. Where's the GIF of this?
I haven't even made this as a...
Oh, proof of concept.
It's like a shitty-looking experiment. Like, yeah.
Gotcha.
I just have some tests where the things go around in circles. Because the problem is, if you want a thing to fall off and land on the wire and have that be consistent between frame rates, it's actually pretty complicated because of, like...
Ah, that sucks.
Because it could be going really fast, and it could skip over the wire, you know? So you have to, like, do weird integral stuff. Anyway.
Yeah.
And then I got a bunch. So then I divided into three chapters, and each chapter has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 zones, and each zone has 3 levels, and each level has 3 secrets.
That's good.
And so that's 305 map things, including the transition levels between them. And then so I've made a database where I put all this stuff in, a spreadsheet where I put all the things in.
And it tracks your progress, essentially.
So I made also a template level that has all of the secret levels wired into it and the exit zones and stuff connected, and but just as like a blank. Then I can run a script that will change all the names and stuff in it to make like a stub for the level.
Yeah, that's good.
So I can change that level and make the colors and some backgrounds and stuff work so the level looks the way I want it to. And then later on, I can go back and then I just have to make the level. I don't have to worry about adjusting the colors and stuff.
Yeah, automation is really good.
Yeah.
Any level of automation you can do in a game you're working on is great. Even if it's just like... simple stuff like, for instance, the Steam release of my game, I just have to click one button.
Yeah.
And it compiles everything, packs it up, sends it out.
Yeah.
It's very handy.
You definitely want to have a build script.
Yeah.
That will ship your game, because what will happen is you'll ship the game, and if you, like, you have to delete all your development stuff and useless giant debug files and whatnot from your list. And if you're doing that manually, what's going to happen is you'll do all that manually, you'll pack up the game, you'll release it, and then you'll realize you have done something wrong and you'll have to start over.
Yeah.
So you want to be able to be like, oh, let me change that thing, run the script again, your computer does a billion things, and then you just ship it again.
Now, I'm not saying this will necessarily be easy, depending on what game engine that you random viewer might be using, but it's definitely worth figuring out. For instance, I had to download a lot of really weird, weird things to get my thing to work properly, but I wanted to automatically zip up the files. I wanted to automatically, like, you know, put it into separate folders and do all these types of things. And it was annoying, but worth it. You only have to do it once. That's the best part.
Yeah, part of the Blockland build script is running a tool that edits the file modified times of all of the things that go into the add-on folder.
Oh, so it doesn't automatically update things it doesn't need to.
Yeah, because if you change the modify time, it changes the hash of the zip file. So the game will then consider it a different mod. It'll have changed it.
That's good to know.
Yeah, so I had to use some goofy tool to change the modify date.
Yeah, if I start shipping out things in zip files, I'll have to keep that in mind.
So I have a spreadsheet where I have 0 to 3 entered for every level. So there's like a row for every level and a column for each part of the level. The level itself, each secret 1, 2, and 3, and then the transition screen, you number them 0 to 3, and the thing will automatically calculate what percentage I am done of things. I have it weighted where having an idea for a level is worth 0% of that level. That's part good. Of my philosophy on creation.
Ideas are great.
Ideas are worthless.
Doing them is better.
Yeah. Having a palette stub is 10%. Having started the level is 50%, and then being done is 100% for each thing.
That's good. You can actually track your progress with numbers and percentages.
Adds up all the ones that are started and stubbed and done, and then multiplies them by the weighting, and then adds them all up. Anyway, I'm 25.28% done with all of the levels.
Haha! Scary.
Yeah. Although, that's what I have. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 completed levels. 12 if you count the hub world, which I guess you should, because that was pretty complicated.
Yeah.
There's a hub world that you don't... I'm a little bit unsure about this design decision, but it's too late now.
Talk about the design decision. What's wrong with it, necessarily?
You start off in the game. You just start playing the game. There's some levels. You get some abilities, and like you can't jump when you first start.
Yeah.
And then there's challenges and stuff. Okay, so about 6 or 7 levels into the game, you will unlock the ability to return to your spaceship. You power up your spaceship, and then you can return to the spaceship in this little transporter room, and then you can revisit any level you've been to. And the transporter room also shows, in-game, it shows what percentage of stuff you've collected from each level.
Yeah.
So it's like a completion menu, except there's no menu, it's in the game.
Sounds fine, sounds good.
Does there need to be a tooltip that says you'll be able to come back to levels like later, so that people don't get stressed out about collecting everything the first time?
I don't know, because games generally don't do that. For instance, I remember playing that South Park RPG they came out with, and I was trying to get everything because it was fun. It wasn't so many secrets that it was overwhelming. But there was one particular instance where I couldn't revisit a level. There was only one level I couldn't revisit, and it just so happened to be the one that I missed.
Yeah.
And so I'm really not sure about that. I know it's kind of immersion breaking, and like, you don't really want to have the text in the world, but maybe if there's a way to visually represent it, like maybe you'll see like a weird teleporter at the start of every single level that's inactive. You'll be able to like indicate to the player that this will become active at some point, you know?
Yeah, I thought about that, but I ended up putting the teleport... Well, there's a teleport destination marker that you can put in the level.
Yeah.
And also, like, it, most of this is automatic, which is where it... there's a script that runs that will generate metadata for all of the maps. So I just make the maps and then I run this script and it makes all of the completion lists and stuff that you have.
Yeah.
And it will, if you come to a level and it has a teleportation marker, it will unlock that level for teleportation.
Yeah.
And then it will just, when you teleport back to that level, it will put you at that marker. And I've just been putting that marker at the first checkpoint in the level.
Has that been working okay?
I mean, it... Well, the thing is, then there's no distinction between teleporting to a level, like gameplay-wise, teleporting to a level, and then dying and starting over at that level.
Yeah.
So, like, for sort of individual level speedrun type things, it doesn't matter how you enter the level.
Hmm. Could you make them just, like, a different color?
Well, we're low on colors.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That's the whole thing.
You could just slightly visually differentiate them. Just, like, a very, like, subtle thing.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, something to think about. I recently released an update to the beta of my game, and I had a funny thing happened where, you know how we build these lists?
Yeah.
We have Notepad. I have a huge Notepad file with everything, and you have a huge Notepad file, I'm pretty sure.
Yes. You have to have a list in order to develop a game.
Yeah. I had written down everything I needed to do before I shipped the update. I'll open it up right now just to double check. Finish the overall interiors. Just kind of like remove the placeholder stuff, make sure there's an ending to the game, make sure that the unlock method works for the final dungeon, and then it was just place some little fun things in the world, overworld, and that was it. So I did all that, and then I shipped it out. What I did not write down was make sure every single MacGuffin spawned from every little dungeon. So the game was unbeatable in the beta that I released. So I made sure that MacGuffin section like thing worked. Like the puzzle involved with it works. I never made them spawn. Only one spawned.
You could just,
when you beat the damn dungeon.
They just offer a prize for anyone who beats the game.
Yeah. Just don't, it's unbeatable. Just fuck everyone. I've been learning a lot of random shit in my game in regards to networking and stuff like that. Turns out making a moving platform in Torque that you can jump on top and ride, huge fucking pain in the ass.
Well, moving platforms in general are...
Yeah, moving platforms in general, but making it networked, making it sync on each person correctly is a nightmare.
Yeah, I have moving platforms in Perennial, and they don't sync across the network. Obviously, there's no networking.
Yeah.
I don't even remember... The entire physics of Perennial is a bunch of stuff I pulled out of my ass and is so, like, I can't add any more features to the game. I gotta go feature lock because it's already at, like, this ridiculous house of cards where you adjust one thing and you have to adjust 50 other things because it pushes the other side of the tower out.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like you have a good amount of stuff in it. You just need to kind of flesh it out a little bit.
This ties into lists or whatever, where you will end up with a list of, like, thousands of things you will not do.
Yeah.
Because it's just, you cannot get your list to zero. Like, there's like 5,000 things for Blockland that are just not going to happen. Right? They're just, also, I mean, some of them are just random ideas and stuff, or they're too complicated, or they become obsolete.
Yeah.
That's why it's also important to not tell anyone what you're doing, which we've screwed up already.
Yeah, we've screwed up that.
Because people will be like, oh, what about that? You just have an idea. You write that idea down, because you need, because later on you're not going to remember.
Yeah.
But if you tell people, if you post on Twitter or whatever, like, your random idea that you had, people are going to think that you're implementing that guaranteed.
Yeah.
Later, if it turns out to be too hard, you've screwed yourself. You can't design everything perfectly from the ground up.
Yeah.
So you design it okay, and then you basically modify and patch on that thing until it's at its breaking point. And then at some point, you just have to start over.
Yeah.
Because, like, you can't learn the lessons, you know, apply the lessons you've learned to the next project. And, I mean, Perennial's at that point already, where it's like, because originally I was like, I'm going to make a platforming game, but there's going to be no ramps, because ramps are complicated. And I was like, well, I could do this.
Ramps are cool.
Here's a way I could do ramps, but but no ramps into ceilings. Okay, well, actually, I figured out how to do ramps into ceilings. It's like,
keeps expanding.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, but no physics on ramps. But now you can slide down a ramp and hit a ramp and launch off it, and it's super fun. But, like, physics is totally, it is bypassed like a Christmas tree.
Yeah. I have not reached that point in Forgettable Dungeon. I think the reason is because I limited. I know now what I'm good at, what I like working on, and what I absolutely hate working on that makes me just want to stop a project.
Yeah.
And it basically worked down to, like, syncing lists.
Over the network.
I fucking hate lists. And what I mean specifically about this is, let's say you write an inventory, right? If you write it in TorqueScript, it becomes a nightmare of updating it back and forth between the client and the server, and then you gotta make the fucking UI and stuff like that. It's a goddamn nightmare, and I hate it. I hate lists in general, but inventories are kind of like the big thing I dislike, which is why in my game, you open up your inventory, it's all in world. None of it's on the client. Absolutely nothing. So if you fuck up and open your inventory on, like, a platform or something, the inventory's just gonna fall into the pit.
Yeah.
It's gonna be gone. It's great. I don't have to think about any lists at all.
Well, I think there's something to be said just for keeping things in universe and everything, because at least it's understandable, right, to everybody. And it's not...
Yeah, it's tangible.
And it's not, like... I hate when playing a game feels like you're editing a file.
Yeah.
That's why in Perennial I have the wire system where, like, when you have a button that opens a door, the button has to be physically connected to the door. Like, it could all be done with goofy things in the editor.
Yeah, that's why I really like what you did with that. I really do.
Thanks, bro.
Haha, game development circle jerking. Isn't it great? I don't know. I think we've said that enough of each other's stuff sucks that I actually do like the thing. I've told you things that suck. Other lesson I learned from my game, I fucking hate working on UIs just in general.
Best UI is no UI.
Yeah, I came around to your point of view on that. I definitely did. I honestly, like, I have to have text in my game because you need to be able to talk. It's ugly. I don't want you to be able to talk in my game, but you have to because a lot of people don't use mics still, and also kids and stuff like that. And then, like, it needs to have a health bar, you know, it needs a health bar, like some health hearts things and stuff like that.
Give everyone text to speech and go with the trespasser health bar where it's just on boobs.
Oh God. Yeah, except my characters are a little small. If I gave them boobs, it'd be really weird.
Just put boobs just on the UI. Just...
Yeah. Well, I, for the health, like, you do lose pieces of your character, but it's not very indicative of, like, this is the absolute death of me if I get hit again. It's just kind of there for, like, added effect, kind of like comedy. It also is a visual indicator, but you want to be able to know, like, I have 6 hits of damage I can take.
Yeah, I wonder if you could replace the bits that get missing with, like, full bright red pixels. So like you turn glowing red?
I can do that. I don't know if it would look good. Are you saying that you don't like when like the head is kind of missing?
Well, yeah, and also it's hard to tell, like, because characters can be different sizes and stuff, so it can be hard to tell if you're missing, how many pieces you're missing.
I gotcha. Yeah, I'll write that down. I'll actually try that.
We have surprise topics, but I ruined the surprise earlier.
Yeah, because I had a reaction. Yeah,
which is someone paid $60,000 for a CSGO skin.
Yeah, I have fucking trouble believing that. I'm just saying.
Look, listen,
so, do you have a source article for me to look at?
I don't think you
please.
Understand. This skin says Skadoodle on it. Huh?
You were honestly going to break into the fucking Metal Gear Solid 1 Revolver Ocelot. This gun is the best gun.
It is the best gun. It says Skadoodle.
I need you to link me to this, please. It's not that I don't believe you. I know stupid people do stupid things. I just really want to see a picture of it. Please tell me it was for like charity or something.
No. It actually got sold twice. Once for $35,000 and then the guy flipped it to $61,000.
How do you flip that?
He bought it for $35 and sold it for $61. So like hats off to that guy that he actually knew the market that well.
That's impressive. I would not pay money for this gun.
It's really tacky looking, too.
Yeah. Then again, I'm one of those you know, infidels who wouldn't pay money for the Dragon Lord op. Actually, I don't know if it was called Dragon Lord. What
it's
was
Dragon
it
Lore.
Do you remember what I'm talking about? Is it Dragon Lord?
Are you talking about this actual skin?
Dragon Lore. Yeah. I was saying Dragon Lord.
Yeah. This is a skin for your AWP sniper rifle in...
The kids say op.
In, well, it's Arctic Warfare Police.
Ah.
I think. That's what they used to say back in the day when I was a professional Counter-Strike player.
You have videos to prove it.
Yeah, I stabbed a guy.
Have you playing casual?
Yeah, I killed the whole team once.
Yeah, I'm still mad to this day, by the way.
There when that happened.
That I killed... No. This is a separate time. I have a video. Actually, it's gone now because my fucking hard drive failed.
How convenient.
No, I killed... It's not a great video. I killed 9 out of 10 in casual. 9 out of fucking 10. I ran out of bullets and I'm like desperately trying to shoot him. I tried fucking throwing my gun at him. It didn't work. And then my friend comes over and kills him. I'm so sad that I didn't get that. It really pisses me off. I don't care about the video. I just wanted to do it.
I kind of want to make a tutorial video about how to be like a scrub lord master in Counter-Strike. Because there's all these videos about how to be good. And people are... There's a real problem where people are like, here's the strategy that the pros use, and that's the best strategy because I'm a pro. You are not a pro. The thing is, like, if you have good, like, the pros all use rifles and stuff, and they never use the submachine guns because if you have good aim, the rifle is like, you can one-shot people in the head.
Yeah.
You don't have good aim, though. So, like, just get the P90 and hose people down. Like, right? And...
Well... I mean, there's a lot to be said about good aim and just learning how the gun fires.
Yeah, but like it's like you can't do stupid stuff in the pro scene. You never see anybody like kamikaze people with a P90 and trying to get behind get behind the entire enemy team and kill them all at the same time.
Yeah, I love that. That's why I loved casual so much.
Yeah,
it was just a complete clusterfuck. It was beautiful.
Because you never in pro that never happens. Because if you do it, you'd get killed because the other team is good. Like, but if you're just playing online, the other team is not good.
There's also the fact that if you're buying a P90. Chances are your team is not doing that well.
Yeah.
So chances are you don't have armor and the other team does, which means your chances of survival are not good. But in casual, you automatically get armor.
Yeah.
Problem solved.
It's all about in the casual, the scrub rush is all about you run forward, you shoot a guy. It's like you just blindly knife run as far as you can and then pull out your gun and try to shoot someone before they're ready.
Yeah, it's so much fun. I used to love doing that with you.
But then you kill somebody, and then the here's where people screw up. You think, oh, my rush worked. Now I will play cautiously and reload my gun.
Yeah.
No, you keep running.
You keep running.
And try to get behind the entire enemy team. Like, it's all about, like, high-risk play.
Yeah.
So you get that highlight reel of you shooting 5 people in the back.
Well, so you say high risk, but I rarely remember a time that we ever went negative playing like that.
Oh, well, my kill-death ratio is like 2.5 to 1 or something. Like,
yeah, I was only at like 1.9 or something like that.
Yeah.
Or 1.8. I think it was 1.8. the hilarious part is it was consistent enough for us to get those kill death ratios. Clearly, there's a valid plan here.
Yeah. But there are, like, War Owl videos. This guy, War Owl, has some tutorials that do help people, and help me even, where about crosshair placement and movement and stuff like that. And because there's a tendency from playing, if you come from playing Quake, to look at the ground a lot, because it's a guaranteed hit with the rocket launcher if you shoot the ground where someone is, but that's not what you want to do with the Counter-Strike.
In Counter-Strike, yeah. See, I think that's the problem we had when we were playing Counter-Strike. We really wanted to play Quake.
What's really genius about Counter-Strike, though, is that it has its highs and lows.
Yeah.
And you can have relaxed... There's different strategies. You can pick high attention and low attention strategies. And so you don't have to be, like, 100% on all the time like you do in Quake. Like, in Quake, you play Quake for half an hour and it's exhausting.
Well, in pro mode, let's be clear. If you're playing Counter-Strike seriously, you have to be on all the time. And it doesn't look that fun to me sometimes.
Yeah.
It just looks very stressful. In casual, there are, you can go different modes. You can try different things, you know?
Yeah, well, it's like... I mean, there's ways you can do okay and not be paying as much attention. Like, just do fun stuff, like throw a smoke grenade down and shoot blindly at the smoke.
That was so much fun when we did that.
We got MT-49s and just smoked the hallway.
Yes, I was just about to bring that up. It was so fun. I want to say we even had compressor with us once or twice when we did that. And so it was just like, throw a smoke grenade, reload, I throw a smoke grenade. It worked beautifully once. I think we got it to work once. And then after that, they were just utterly petrified. Then we had to start rushing straight through.
Yeah.
That I don't know. That's some of my favorite. Some of my favorite things are just the absolute stupid things that we did that shouldn't have worked. Yeah. Like we did. Remember we were trying to do the tactical flashbang in one of the levels. We were trying to do like quick flashbang and then run in.
They call it a pop flash.
Pop flash, yeah. Except we couldn't do it. So what we ended up doing was just throw the flash grenade at them and then go in and kill them before it went off.
Yeah,
and it had a stupid success rate the few times we did it, but then we couldn't get to work again.
Well, the simple tactic of throwing the flashbang in the corner and running out with it will make any
person flinch.
Any scrub, like, well, it will step up your game immediately just knowing that trick.
Yeah, just to be clear, we were not doing that. We were throwing it at them sometimes. I didn't have control, at least, of my bounces, so it took me a while to get that down. Oh, that shit was fun.
But back on the topic of skins, I did end up buying a skin for Counter-Strike for $1 to get a StatTrak P90.
You got the dollar from trading.
Yeah, I made a profit on Counter-Strike. I made like 20.
Oh yeah, that's like, right. We both did. Holy shit, I forgot. Because
we were there when they launched the Chroma event. We were playing it, and the Chroma cases started. And when you first got the new cases, you could sell them for like $20. And then we ended up selling them for like $5 or $10 because like...
Yeah, it took us a while, but we got them. Yeah, I bought so many stupid... Like, I know we at least have a few StatTrak guns. And we didn't... Because we didn't care what they looked like. We just wanted them to, you know, the count had to go up.
Yeah, numbers go up, man.
That was it.
I think they should add a... here's my pitch. They should add a different kind of StatTrak variant that counts when you get double kills and triple kills and aces and stuff.
That'd be pretty cool.
Maybe it could have more than one number on the thing, or it could be...
Yeah. See, now here's a question for you. Is Overwatch to you a casual Counter-Strike? Because I know you like Overwatch a lot.
I don't know if I like it. I play it a lot. It's way more about... I don't know what it's about. See, the thing is, it's about, like... There's some aiming and stuff, but it's not as important because there's a lot of no aims.
Yeah.
Right? And then it can be really frustrating when I'm playing, like, Soldier or whatever, and then just, like, two no-aim characters, like... bum rush me and you just can't get away.
Yeah, because there's nothing you can do.
Yeah, sometimes this character Moira has a no aim health drain thing and the range is ludicrous, and on certain levels, like, the thing is they've got all these different ranges and stuff and they say everything's balanced, and it might be balanced as a whole, but it's not balanced on individual levels. So like on certain individual levels, like there's parts where you have to run like push through a corridor or whatever, and Junkrat just dominates on that because he just spams grenades in there.
Yeah.
And like you can't do anything really. And then there's certain levels where Pharah is useless, but or some levels where she's freaking dominates because you can shoot from a long distance away and Ferris character that flies and has rockets.
Yeah.
And where there's lots of obstacles and stuff that she can be around so she can have like limited line of sight to people. And also there's times where you're utterly dependent on team composition, which is, I guess, just like all the time.
Yeah.
Where like if you don't have a healer, you are toast.
Yeah. And it's sort of like Team Fortress 2 in that way.
Yeah.
Except, I don't know. Am I wrong to think to say that Team Fortress 2 is a better designed game?
No.
Because, like, it's... Overwatch is a very fine-tuned game, at least what I've seen of it. It just looks like there's just a lot more going on, so it becomes harder to grasp the core balance of it.
There is, and it's... You gotta know picks and counterpicks and stuff for characters, and there's problems of, like... It's very knife-edge in that there's... You go from stomping the other team to being stomped.
Yeah.
With seemingly no control over it. And it's just because it's like a chaotic system that you can't control. Where one level I'm getting zero deaths, triple gold medals. And the next level I can't do anything and everyone's on the microphone telling me how much I suck.
I mean, that's kind of how... No, that was not that common in Counter-Strike.
Well, it's because there's like roles and stuff. Everybody basically has the same role in Counter-Strike. I mean...
Yeah, kill the other people.
Well, at the high levels, there's like, entry fragger and opera and stuff.
But, yeah.
But it's...
At casual scrub levels that we played, it didn't matter.
Yeah, you have a gun, you shoot the dudes. But in Overwatch, you have to have like a tank and a healer, like sort of RPG level things.
Yeah, because it's like a MOBA type combination.
Yeah, and then but I play DPS because I consider that a video game. Where you are damaging the enemy, you know, you shoot them with your gun. And so if everyone isn't dying all the time, it's my fault, according to everyone else on my team. And I swear people just pick healer and tank because they want to be able to blame other people for their failures.
Yeah.
Like, I'll be like, there's the tank and the tank just runs off and gets killed. Like, doesn't protect your teammates. And then it's like, oh, how come you, it's like, oh, and I've got gold damage. Just, yeah, because you kamikaze'd into the enemy and left your entire team to die.
Yeah. See, it's interesting, though, because the way you say that, it basically levels out to like, oh, yeah, team composition and stuff like that. It kind of can go the wrong way. What happened when we played Counter-Strike was we would go like 5-6 games in a row and we'd do pretty well. We'd at least do good or like get a lucky spree and kind of do great, right? Yeah. Every once in a while, there was always that like bad, like we did bad. And it was always because like we could not kill one guy, right? You remember those type of situations? And to this day, I mean, we sometimes we would be like, is that hacking? Is that guy not hacking? Because there are people out there who are literally 10 times better than us at Counter-Strike.
Yeah, the thing is that high-level Counter-Strike play is indistinguishable from cheating most of the time.
Yeah. So there's always that funny bit of like, well, I don't know. Like, I feel like if you fight someone, you're going to be able to kill him accidentally eventually. Because this is going to be an instance where like everyone else was shooting him and you shot last.
Yeah, in Overwatch, that happens where, like, you know, the problem is it's not like a guy is super good. It's so, like, you just can't kill, like, a Genji or something or a Widowmaker or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, like, Widowmaker is, like, the one case where it's actually, like, high skill ceiling and someone can get in there and be, like, on a Smurf account and just destroy everyone.
Smurfs.
Where, like, you just can't kill one particular class. Like, a Junkrat's just somewhere just spamming bombs at you all the time. You can't get to him. And the reason you can't get to him, if people on your team will be like, oh, kill that Junkrat or kill the Pharaoh or whatever. And you just can't get to them because the rest of the team has guarded all the, like, they're all as a block.
Yeah.
And you can never fight one person, you know? And, like, so it's just, like, this synergy thing that's completely intangible. And, like, I've had games where I'm just invincible.
Yeah.
Because my team is... reasonable level of confidence, but if it like breaks in one point, now like one person dies. Like, here's some bullshit defending on this on Watch Gibraltar. No one's even gonna know what the fuck I'm talking about, but
I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about.
Yeah, defending on Watch Gibraltar, there's one little corridor on the side. I'm Junkrat. You plant your bear trap in there, and people see you in the side hallway. They run up the hallway, you backtrack, they step in the trap, they get trapped, you shoot bombs at them, they're dead every time.
Okay,
basically any character comes up the hallway, I can win. Except Roadhog. Roadhog has 650 health. He can heal himself for another, like, 300 health. So you have to do, like, 900 damage to him. And he has this hook where he can hook you and bring him in, like, instantly, bring you close to him, and then shoot you with his massive shotgun. So you just basically get insta-killed. So I get insta-killed.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, so, like, you see him, you can't even run away in time because all the characters are really slow, except for Soldier.
Gotcha.
So, like, you see this character. Well, I'm dead. Like, you know way ahead of time that you can't do anything unless he spazzes out and misses the hook. So, like, I get hooked, I get picked, now my team is down to on five, and they don't have any massive damage characters, so then we lose the first point. It's like it just collapses immediately, like, to zero.
Yeah.
I also think there might be some weird statistical anomalies that happen where if, as soldier, if I do well, my team does worse. Because...
Oh, that's weird.
There's a... You basically, you gain ultimate ability of your ultimate ability.
By killing people.
Yeah, you, by, and capturing by points. Killing and or healing people if you're a healer on your team.
Oh, so not capturing points.
I don't know. There's some things that go into... Anyway, doing well, basically. Like, if you're yeah. definitely killing people.
Yes.
Builds up your ultimate charge.
Murder. Murder's good.
So, like, let's say murdering, you know, counts for a certain number of points, but there's a multiplier for each character, depending... Like, so your different characters have different rates of charge for the ultimate ability. And soldiers is pretty slow. So, if I go out there and kill a bunch of people, I'm taking all the points.
Yeah, the power, basically.
The imaginary background points that you don't see.
Yeah,
but it goes into a shitty multiplier that charges my ultimate ability slowly, and even once you fully use soldier's ultimate ability, it's not as good as other characters. It's like way more situational.
Yeah,
like he has this auto aim ability where he can auto aim at anybody, but the thing is, if anybody is behind a wall, it doesn't work. Or if they use the deflect ability like Genji does, it doesn't work. If they have a shield, it doesn't work. So like, there's all these things that can hard counter it.
Yeah.
So like, it's very situational. Whereas like, some people have an ability that just kills everyone.
Yeah.
So like, by doing well, I'm like stealing the points, and then I'm not like, I should be letting my teammates who have a different ultimate ability charge rate.
Yeah, one that's more useful for the team.
Like, I'm not sure if this is true, but I've just noticed that sometimes it's like I'm getting triple gold and actually doing well, and we lose. But if I'm doing, but like times where we stomp the other team, I've had times where we stomp the other team where I'm not playing. Like, I forgot the game started. Like, I all tabbed in and we're already winning. Like, so am I making the team worse? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe overthinking it, but that is kind of a weird anomaly there.
But it looks nice, and the thing is, if they made Team Fortress 3, I would play that.
Right. Yeah, they're not going to.
Right, it's just that it looks like it's a 10-year-old game.
I don't know. I still think Team Fortress 2 looks pretty good. Once when they upgraded the source a while back, it looks better-ish.
Also, you know, I play Counter-Strike, but I don't want to play Dust 2. I'm done with Dust 2. Dust 2 is a dumb
map. Yeah, because we used to play all the new maps, right? Yeah. They would release the custom maps, not custom maps, but like the user-made maps. And then people would play on them for like a few weeks and they stop because, oh, they're not official. They're not the, you know, top ones that the, you know, competitive people are playing. Which doesn't make any sense to me. Why do you want to play casual Dust 2?
Dust 2 is a shit map because it has the double doors, right? So like, if you're a counter-terrorist, you have to either go, if you want to go to B, then... You have to jump. You have to roll the dice of whether or not you're going to get killed in the first 2 seconds.
Yeah. There's also the fact that, you know, we played Dust 2 for fucking 10 years.
Yeah. I'd rather play Dust 1.
There's no new strategy that we're going to find playing Dust 2.
Yeah.
There isn't.
Rush B, no stop, etc.
I remember, what was that one map? I don't remember the name of it anymore because it was immediately removed from the cycle.
They all have like non-descriptive names.
Yeah. We went through a lot of vents. And it was like kind of had like a very nice little area, had a lot of foliage inside of like the buildings. And it was.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. That was like one of the newer maps.
Yeah, it was a DE one. It was a destruction one. What was it? Actually, I think they're all destruction now, aren't they?
There's some hostage rescue ones.
Huh. I think, I don't know, it's weird. Weird to think. I think mostly they're not that popular, are they? I guess it's less fun. I don't know. I still like them. But anyway, that one map I really enjoyed and people hated it. Because it wasn't competitive, like, focused. I had a lot of fun. You know, we'd run through the vents. You can go through the vents. You could shoot people as they were going through the vents if you were positioned in a certain place. And it was an interesting little take on it.
Workout is the only one map I can remember. Wait,
Workout?
Because it's in a gym.
Didn't Workout suck?
That's all right.
It was okay. I feel like we determined that one side was really, really one-sided.
I don't know, but at least it's named after a thing in the map, and you can remember what the map is. Not like Inferno or whatever. What is Inferno? Is it in a fire? No, it's just into some stones, like every other map.
I can't remember the name of the map, dude. It's killing me.
List of CS Go maps.
All right, here's the DE maps.
Like fucking Mirage and what shit name is that? Cobbles? Is that different from Cobble? Inferno, that's an overpass. What a bunch of shit names. Like, they can't even think of a thing to put in the map to make it recognizable.
I don't think we're going to find this.
This is the thing about maps. You're making a map, you have to have it recognizable as a thing, right? It has to have some sort of theme. Just pick a theme so that people will be like, oh, it's the map with the blank.
Yes.
If that means putting a gorilla statue in the middle.
I was going to say giant teddy bear.
Calling the map gorilla, you can just be like, oh, gorilla. Like, so you can remember what it is.
That would be a good name for a map.
Also, you have to have call-outs for everything. You have to, like...
Yes.
So that people would be like, oh, it's the upper, whatever, balcony, underpass, something. Just invent a name and just put it on the map somewhere, like, physically. And that sort of ties into naming your game. My game should be called Round Planet.
I don't know about that. Pixel Man Jumps.
I'm worried about everything all the time, but specifically...
I'm worried about everything. Have you seen ants? Have you fucking seen them?
Dude, there's ants in my apartment. But I did say once that in my... Because at one point, my neighbor had a cat, and then, like, fleas escaped in my apartment. And I said at the time, after I poisoned all those fleas, that I would rather live in an ant farm than ever see... if it meant never seeing a flea again.
Whoops.
So maybe that was my punishment. But I still stand by it. Because ants don't bite you that much.
We got mice. That's always fun.
Oh, I was worried about... one thing I worry about game names on Steam is that... Is there a disproportionate amount of sales to games that have, like, 8-bit... They're named, like, 8-bit man, 8-bit boy, pixel adventure. Like, are people... There's a bunch of games that are named like that. Are people buying those games because they type into the Steam search thing? They just start typing 8-bit thing because they want an 8-bit thing.
Well, I like 8-bit things.
Like, but are people typing that into the Steam search, and is it, you know, disproportionately leading them to 8-bit named games?
I don't know.
And then are they buying those? Like, because there's no, like, tag search or anything. Like, if you type 8-bit, you just get games that are named 8-bit. But are people actually searching for that?
I'm not sure. I also want to add one quick thing to naming maps. I noticed that I saved a lot of screenshots of the scoreboard after we won games, because we got sometimes funny things. And you did the same thing.
Yeah.
There's no fucking map name on the screen. It just says we win. And we have, like, crazy kill death ratios in this. And I have no idea what map we played on.
Yeah.
Facade. Was it Facade?
Facade looks like... looks like
Season.
Assault.
It was Season, wasn't it? That sounds right.
Yeah.
It was Season. Hurrah!
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to know how I found this? I had to look at a list of the maps from a screenshot while we're on the map.
They could have called plants. Could have called plants and stuff.
Anyway.
Green walls. The map.
I think we're kind of rambling on at this point. We should probably do an outro thing.
All right. Hit it.
All right. That was about too long of a podcast. So now we're going to stop.